The Lifeboat Hour with Michael Rupert, Sundays at 9 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Nightclub at the end of the world. This is Michael C. Rupert. Welcome back to the Lifeboat Hour. It is Sunday, March 13th, 2011, just a few days after a catastrophic earthquake in Japan, which is a world-changing event which is still unfolding as we gather tonight. It's been amazingly busy, but what I want to do tonight, because it's good to be back with you all again, is to try to catch up on this last week and to try to talk about where we are now. And if you have questions and you want to talk about what's going on, there's a lot of people, I'm sure, want to talk about Japan and what's happening all around. And I'm just going to leave it open to you guys, because you last week especially, thank you so much. Your participation was fabulous. We want that tonight. I'm just going to start by running down a few things. Two of CollapseNet's, well, all of our staff is beloved, but two really important members, Rice Farmer, who does, who helps us with the collection of stories for the World News Desk every day, and our supervising editor, Dale Sinner, both live in Japan, and both are struggling right now. I know that we know that they are both alive. We know that their family members, as far as we know, are fine, but there are serious issues with food, water, transportation, shelter, and they are there. The latest reports I get from them indicate that rolling blackouts are being instituted all over Japan, and it looks like no part of that country will have power 24/7 anymore. They're looking at 7-hour-a-day rolling blackouts. I don't know how that will affect Tokyo. The primary issues that they report right now are food and shelter and medical relief for the untold number of casualties, walking and otherwise, that are out there. And they paint a scene that is anything close to being resolved, stable, even accessible yet. There's been a tremendous amount of confusion about the state of a number of nuclear reactors on the coast. I've been tracking it all day, and the mainstream media are doing stories themselves on the conflicting stories. We do know that that there has been a small release of radiation. Some people are saying not a complete core meltdown. Some people are saying yes, it has been for one of the reactors, which would mean an automatic release. Breach of the containment building at Fukushima Daiichi number one is the key issue. And Nicole Foss, who is one of our beloved experts on everything, aside from being a thoroughly educated economist, she did undergraduate studies, guess what, in nuclear safety, and she just wrote an excellent piece called How Black is the Japanese Nuclear Swan, which just went up today at the automaticearth.blogspot.com. And Nicole does an excellent scientific job of saying there is really good reason to question any of the information that we are receiving right now as to the state of the reactors. From a scientific standpoint, she makes a good case that there probably has been a breach or a compromise of the containment structure at number one. And that also we know that there are problems now at least two more reactors, and some stories say three, some stories say four. The point that I'm making with all of this is that we don't have a handle on what the situation is. And if there is a catastrophic release, yesterday CollapseNet put up our third emergency action alert, recommending that everyone on the Pacific coast of North America purchase non-prescription potassium iodide, which helps prevent absorption of radioactive iodine in the event of a dramatic catastrophic release into the atmosphere. Excuse me, of radiation, because what's going on is that the trade winds blow directly to the Pacific coast, and we have a couple of models up there. We got snookered because some group of clowns put one map up showing projected timetable, but it turned out to be a fraudulent map. Fortunately, I had secured another map which corroborated it. But that doesn't change the essence of the alert that we put out yesterday at all at CollapseNet. That alert still stands. We're all still very concerned. We're all kind of holding our breath. Nicole Foss Stoneley from the Automatic Earth, in her story today, said, quote, "In my view, nuclear power represents an unjustified faith in the power of human societies to control extremely complex technologies over the very long term. Any activity requiring a great deal of complex and cooperative control will do badly in difficult economic times." It's the economic times which are, of course, of issue, as are many other things right now. If you want to call in tonight to talk about, so that we can kind of kick around what we can expect the fallout from this to be, please call in at 1-888-874-4888. Or you can email me directly at lifeboathour@progressiveradionetwork.com. So let me back up a little bit. I know many people are going to be wanting to ask me what I think the economic impact of the Japanese earthquake is going to be. I'm not even going there. And one of the things that I noticed today out in the world of economic writers and business writers that I follow and respect, everyone from Nicole Foss to Chris Martinson to Zero Hedge to, you know, there's a lot of real good thinkers out there. Everybody's kind of standing back and not making any economic calls at the moment. What is clear to me is that Japan's back is broken. It cannot rebuild. I mean, the outpouring of support to Japan, of course, is touching to see. But in the age of post-peak oil age, in the age of diminishing resources rather than infinite resources, there will be no Marshall Plan. There will be no energy to rebuild Japan. All the printed money in the world doesn't amount to energy. And Japan is now, of course, suffering. Japan is the third largest consumer of oil on the planet at about 5 million barrels a day. Most of that is offline now in terms of conventional consumption or what they normally measure. But now Japan's crying need will be for diesel and generators, and that brings up refining issues. And so we don't quite know how it's going to play out in the markets tomorrow. Of course, they're all kind of rigged and screwy anyway. So I think we should not spend a lot of time tonight yet worrying about the economic issues. In front of the whole world right now, of course, are the humanitarian issues. And today and tonight, we are all Japanese. We are all tied together. In this last week, of course, it's been, if you've been following me, I have been running around like a crazed maniac out there. I lectured at the University of Delaware on Thursday to a large crowd, about 250, 300 people there. It was a great lecture, and as I gave that lecture, which was the night of the earthquake, this was before the earthquake, I was kind of overwhelmed at the state of affairs over in the world, over Libya, over Saudi Arabia, over everything else that's taking place. And we see that there is a crescendo building now, and this is the one thing that I would hope that those of us who have been at this lifeboat building process for a long time would be able to see, is that what we can expect from now on, from here on out, you know, is like Dmitry Orlov said, you know, if you can't see it happening, the collapse happening now, you have a problem. You might need some glasses. But we can expect the frequency and the severity of catastrophic events to increase from here on out. This is the way complex civilizations go, and the complexity, just as we see unfolding in Japan itself, is an amazing issue. I was real struck during the week as I was watching the desperation building around the world over failed bailouts and printing money in the European Union failing continuously, and economies failing, and oil prices spiking. I picked up two key stories last week, which really, really sat me back and really just made me catch my breath. One was a statement published, I believe it was in Der Spiegel. We had it on the World News Desk at CollapseNet, from the new German Interior Ministry, who said, quote, "There is no place in Germany for Muslims." Now, I am German, being 60 years old, my father served in World War II. We're of German ancestry, came from a town called Rupertsburg outside of Heidelberg in Germany. And my great-grandfather migrated here, and my dad dropped bombs on the country. But to hear that come out of a German government official's mouth was absolutely breathtaking, but it wasn't as breathtaking as the second one. But what that tells me is not that we need to be afraid of Germany. That's not the point. What that said was is that there is something now in the human soul which harkens back to that atavistic mind, and that that beast is still very much with us, and we don't need to be afraid of Germany. We need to be afraid of ourselves now. As we see CNN's running a show, about Muslims not welcome, and that, of course, is just symptomatic of the kind of nastiness that's coming out. But 2 days before the earthquake, I clipped a story from a Tokyo paper, and that wound up also in the World News Desk. It's right there. It's sourced. It's confirmed. It's credible. The mayor of Tokyo said 2 days before the earthquake that he believed that Japan should develop nuclear weapons, nuclear option to deal with the threat from China. And 2 days after that, this happened. I can only sit back and kind of shake my head at that, but it's a very sad commentary on where we are. On top of all that, in Libya, now forget NATO intervention for a while. I mean, the Arab League voted unanimously to have a no-fly zone instituted over Libya, which would have been probably an okay or understandable thing to try to do even before, but I was questioning NATO's ability to do that, and now I really question it because the I believe it's the Enterprise, or it was the one of the U.S. Nimitz class carrier battle groups is en route to Japan. There's 12 to 14 ships en route to Japan. The Navy would have to really institute the no-fly zone for its role in NATO, and I just don't see that happening. And what we see, of course, is that Muammar Gaddafi, who has been taking back his country from the rebels, is unleashing a wave of merciless bloodletting in that country. They did try to have a day of rage in Saudi Arabia the day after the earthquake. It was scheduled for Friday. And the reports that I got were as soon as two demonstrators showed up on the street, they were surrounded and taken away, period. There was no chance for the day of rage in Saudi Arabia to get off the ground. That doesn't mean the discontent still isn't there. Last week, we also had a pipeline in Iraq bombed, taking 500,000 barrels a day out of the global supply. Take 6 to 8 weeks to get that back up. So we just have really no idea how this is going to play. But for me, Japan, the Japanese earthquake has been the last great wake-up call. And how it's going to play out at this point, God only knows. I've got a question coming in. We're going to take that. We're just going to sit here and answer questions and talk as we try to figure out what to make out of this. I got to tell you, I'm pretty tired. Yesterday, I spoke for Z Day, Zeitgeist Day, here at the LA Convention Center. That was a pretty interesting speech. Oh, and I also should say that we got a place up in Northern California. I've got to be moved up there by April 1st, but we're glad that in this wonderful community where we have so many friends, I was able to secure 2 acres with a well, so that at least I know that we can feed the Collapse Net staff if they have to run away, and I can't wait to get up there, but that's a lot of work over the next month. So Justin DiArmond wrote, hello, Mike. Hello again, Mike. CollapseNet member here. Good. Love Crossing the Rubicon. Good. Halfway through, and it's riveting. The chapters about how deep and far, okay, well, covers, blah, blah, blah. I want to find the question. So, concerned about the fallout. Should I be taking potassium iodide pills? I have a pregnant girlfriend due in 4 weeks. Okay. Let's talk about potassium iodide. Here's what I know, and I've been, of course, as you know, I've been recommending to CollapseNet members that you have a supply of this inexpensive non-prescription drug for a long time. In a radioactive release, the thyroid gland on its own happens to love iodine. It'll just suck it up. And And that's the problem if there is radioactive iodine in the atmosphere. So what potassium iodide does is if you take it before exposure, ideally, or immediately after, it will fill up the thyroid glands with so much iodine it can't hold anymore. Therefore, any that is absorbed into the body will not rush straight to the thyroid gland. It'll be eliminated. It's a prophylactic. And it's been strongly recommended. I saw stories yesterday on CNN confirming that the Japanese government had issued potassium iodide to people in the region. So that's a confirmation that there has been a leak, or they're anticipating one. Again, that's still very much unresolved. But you would want to take it before exposure, and we would have time. Now, the best numbers I've seen indicate that we would have about 3 days, perhaps, if after a massive release. Now, of course, the amount of radiation will mitigate over distance, but I hearken back to the release from Chernobyl, where we saw the maps of the radiation, how it moved over Asia and Europe, and there were fallouts from that. And now we have two or three reactors, maybe as many as five, that are really on the edge. So if there is a potential for a huge catastrophic release. So I would go and order. The way I tell people to do it is to Google online for potassium iodide. You can buy it online. If you, we have found some places where you can buy it over the counter. Most small drugstores will not have it. Large Whole Foods here in Los Angeles, we found, did have it. But you want large health food supply stores may carry it in stock. But you probably have time to order it online and get it shipped. It's not expensive at all, and it really is comforting to have around. And we are by no means out of the wood with that. So, Justin, there are other things. There's other information online. I'm not qualified to talk about what a pregnant woman should do with this, and you might want to seek some more medical information on that. But again, the time to be concerned is once we know that there is a release, a serious or catastrophic release, if there is a catastrophic meltdown. Then you still have a window of time to start getting it into your system. and so we and everybody else will try to let you know. I am, like way too skeptical about any statements from anybody now. I am a guy who sat here and watched the U.S. government say that Iran-Contra had been fully investigated, or that, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I think back mostly to Deepwater Horizon, of course, and all the proclamations about how small the oil spill was and how it was under control, and now about how safe the Gulf is, even as we continue to on CollapseNet to put up credible, really seriously researched stories, medical stories, and videos from people who are there and very sick and poisoned. Hair falling out, sores, and everything else. So I'm a natural born skeptic, and I'm not one who's going to think that everything I hear from the government is true. So anyway, CollapseNet, we're doing really good at CollapseNet. I want to thank all of the hundreds of new members we have. We now have members in 60 countries around the world. We have like 35 regional blogs. The Japan blog is extremely heavy on CollapseNet right now. We have in the Lighthouse directory, and boy, is the Lighthouse directory coming in handy. On top of everything else that's going on the 16th, the Nation on their website will be putting up a 22-minute interview with me in their ongoing video series on peak oil. I have seen an advanced cut, and I think it came out great, and it's very clear that there is an awakening going on. But CollapseNet is growing rapidly. We're kind of slowed down a little bit because Dale and Rice Farmer are offline for a while. We expect them back soon and hope they're well. But we're keeping up with it, and we're obviously bringing you what you want. We have, of course, on the World News Desk every day the best summation and compendium of news stories from around the world with my analysis and the analysis of Rice Farmer and Jenna Orkin. And, boy, we've been getting it so right. But now is the time to just hold back now and catch our breath and see see what we're doing with Japan and what kind of a world that leaves us in. I'll be watching the markets closely tomorrow. And it's funny just now when we talk about catching our breath. Again, the number to call tonight is 1-888-874-4888. And you can email me direct at lifeboathour@collapsenet.com. You talk about catching your breath. That's so much what I want to do today. And boy, after the show tonight, I'm just unplugging until I got to go face everything Monday morning. But there's a song I really need to hear. It's about when you just have a window in time, just a brief moment in time, even though catastrophic things are happening around you. You take time to celebrate the loved ones around you, the opportunity to play, create, and be joyous, because if you don't, you might not make the long haul. This is a song called, from New White Trash, called Avalanche and Earthquake. It's known as my signature song. That song always works for me. Gave me goosebumps. That's That's Avalanche and Earthquake from New White Trash from our double CD Double Wide, and you can find that at newwhitetrash.com. The band is myself, Doug Lewis, co-founded by Andy Kravitz, who's back in Philly making records, Garrett Tompkins, and we have vocals by the amazing Chris Vigard. Just a lot of great people helped us with this. We were mastered by Bob Rice, whose last project was for Roger Waters of Pink Floyd, and you can find that there. You can listen to all the songs for free, all 37 originals. And you can buy them and download them for $11.11 and for $22.22. You can get a double CD sent to you, and we even got a sponsor's edition. Go check out the website. I know Doug will like it, and I will. My friend Doug Lewis, my bandmate, is down. He just had a little surgery. I've been out trying to take care of him, too. Boy, for some days when it rains, it pours. But here we are back dealing with that, and that was a good little break for me. Got a question from Ward, who says, "Hi, Mike. How do you think the need for refined petroleum products in Japan, in light of the disaster's effect on their refineries and distribution systems, will affect prices for refined products here, such as diesel and gasoline? Do you believe that this will cause shortages in the U.S. or just put pressure on things here to drive up prices?" It's a really good question. And the answer is, I don't know yet. What is certain is that, look, Toyota, Honda, Nissan, all the Japanese car companies have shut down their plants. Japan is fundamentally without enough electricity, and their grid is absolutely strained and cracked and broken. So in terms of cars driving around, there will be a lot less of that. That's gasoline. And as I said at the top of the show, their need's going to be for diesel, for generators. They desperately need to find a way, if they can, and it appears that the radiation is too intense, to get diesel generators close enough to start pumping water into the reactors. My understanding is they're now pumping seawater into two, possibly three reactors, which, as we know, is a last-ditch effort. But you got to run those diesel generators. But everything else that happens now with the grid is down is going to have to be provided by diesel-generated electricity. Now, I don't know what that's going to do, because I don't know if they have enough generators in place or can get them in place. Certainly, there's going to be a huge demand for diesel as the recovery, the dig-out proceeds a little bit. And that will stress, because Japan's refineries are down as well. So you can't just ship them a bunch of oil. That's like shipping them a bunch of rice seeds and thinking that you fed them. They got to, you know, plant the rice and make it grow. How are they going to refine it? So the amount of diesel that Japan is going to need, I believe, is going to be astronomical, and I believe it will really skew the refinery process worldwide as stocks of diesel fuel are depleted to send aid to Japan, because in this fungible world economy, everybody needs every other buddy's economy to more or less function, because of the interrelationship with currency arbitrage and all the paper trades and derivatives that are floating around out there. Japan, we know, is a nation who's it is the most deeply in debt nation in the world, with current debt at 200% of GDP, and it was failing before the earthquake. And of course, if you're a CollapseNet member, you've been seeing that on a regular basis on the World News Desk for about a year, as we've documented how bad that situation is economically. So, I'm really, and I want to hold and watch and see and not really think I know what's going to come next, because it could be anything and it could be everything. Here's a question from Eric to the Lifeboat Hour. "Hi, Mike. I'm a CollapseNet member and formerly an FTW subscriber as well. Hoorah, from the Wilderness. I'd like to give a shout-out tonight to everybody who ever had anything to do with From the Wilderness. Thank you so much. Do you have a sense of what percentage of Japan's base load power its nukes provide? It sounds like the ones that have been damaged will be out of commission for months or years, even in the best-case scenario, so I wonder how Japan will replace that in the near to mid-term." That's a really good question. We know that Japan has, by some accounts, 54 and by some accounts, 55 nuclear power stations supplying roughly one-third of its electricity. We know that 6 or 7 of those reactors are now shut down offline. Well, they're offline. Shutting them down is another issue for a few of them. And yes, that is going to be critical, because first of all, these reactors, when you pump seawater and boric acid you have corroded, you have killed that reactor. It's never coming online again. So we know that two of their 55 reactors ain't coming back up again. How are you going to replace that electricity? And of the remaining ones that are in trouble, you know, it's a pretty good guess. And I think Nicole Foss did an excellent job of scientifically analyzing the situation. It's still very uncertain, and I wouldn't accept anybody's conclusive statements about what's going on yet. It's not under control. So that's not going to be replaced. Now, if you consider it takes a couple years probably to build a conventional power generating station burning on natural gas, Japan has none, would have to be imported liquefied natural gas, no. So it would have to be probably diesel or coal. But you'd have to build those to replace. So if we all remember that there's a 96% correlation between GDP growth and greenhouse gas emission, meaning that you got to burn fossil fuels to make the GDP run, you obviously, as Dr. Richard Duncan, one of the great lions of the peak oil movement, made it so clear that electricity is the lifeblood of human industrial civilization, and it's not going to be replaced. Because there aren't any resources. Again, that's the huge difference. When I lectured at University of Delaware, Max, not my assistant Max, there was another Max who organized the event. Great guy. He asked me, what does the current situation of collapse have in common with the Great Depression? I said, that's not the issue. The issue is what the current situation of the collapse of industrial civilization has to do. Is the difference, and the difference is this time there's no cheap energy and no resources, and there certainly is no money. And looking at the really touching amount of relief that people are trying to get to Japan right now, remember we didn't rebuild Haiti. Remember that we never fixed New Orleans after Katrina, and remember that we killed the Gulf of Mexico, we, the human race, killed the Gulf of Mexico, and we left that unresolved. So be very, very skeptical of any assertions that that Japan is going to be rebuilt or that Japan will ever resume anything like its place as the third largest economy in the world. What happens to its debt and all that is secondary. What you want to do now is just save Japanese lives. We're coming up on a station break. The rest of the hour is yours. You can call in with any questions, anything you want at 1-888-874-4888, or you can email me directly at lifeboathour@collapsenet.com. This is Michael C. Rupert. You're on the Lifeboat Hour. We're going to take a station break. Be right back after this.
Oh, what a mess we left you.
Listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
This is Bill Bowie.
And this is Kelsey Flynn.
Of Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability.
We bring you news and interviews
with the likes of Wangari Maathai, Bill McKibben, Hazel Henderson, Paul Hawken, Francis Moore LePay, and many others. Tune in to Sea Change Radio here on the Progressive Radio Network on Saturdays at 7 in the evening.
Hey, Lee.
Yeah, Jeff.
Your girlfriend gave another interview.
No, don't play it.
Listen to this.
I have a journalism degree. That is what I studied. I understand that this cornerstone of our democracy is a free press.
Shut it off. I said not to play it.
We are in the worst reality show in history.
Why won't she shut up?
You know she's going to be president, right?
Okay, stop it. That's not funny.
I think we should just go limp. Lay back. Maybe then the Mama Grizzly won't tear off your limbs.
Cheater in the Rude. Thursdays, 8 p.m. Progressive Radio Network.
Yeah. This is Barry Farber with the best self-improvement advice you've ever had or ever heard. Learn a foreign language. Sounds impossible? Give me a chance to prove that I'm Barry Farber. I can guide you to mastery of any language in the world quickly, easily, inexpensively, and at home. You will grow culturally, linguistically, intellectually, commercially, professionally, even romantically. Get that smile off your face. It happened to me. Listen to the Barry Farber Language Club for details. Wednesday mornings right here on the Progressive Radio Network. Every Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. beginning March 23rd.
You are listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
Oh, what a mess we left you. What a mess we left you. Against the odds and other gods, we left you such a mess.
Toasting on tea and champagne. Nothing left but a dry disdain. And by the fire in full moon of time.
What a mess we left you. That song is called Weird Kind of Sense. Also a new white trash song. That's one of two that I wrote big chunks of that I'm really fond of. We're leaving a big mess behind. We got a question from Sharon in New Jersey. She's asking what my thoughts are on what the public reaction will be to the idea of nuclear power after the catastrophe in Japan. Well, even before... Public opinion actually means nothing, because before this, nuclear power was dead. I really established that, and many other people have, but conclusively in Confronting Collapse, my book that's the companion book for the documentary Collapse. There's a 13-year incubation period for nuclear reactors, and no new reactors have been begun in the United States since Three Mile Island. And there's no money. They are incredibly expensive to build and incredibly labor-intensive. Most of them were built in the era when oil was $20 a barrel, as opposed to what may be $120 a barrel next week. And the energy-intensive work in constructing a nuclear reactor is really difficult to comprehend. But Nicole Foss, you know, is absolutely correct, is that it is the complexity of these systems. And time again, as we've all watched in the aftermath of the Japanese earthquake, you hear the description, well, we had the cooling system, a separate standalone cooling system that shared no parts. That was the backup, and we had another one behind that, and we had the water and the diesel generators for the... But then what happened was of course, that the tsunami overwhelmed all of it. And so it's clear that, you know, we are in a place of increased activity on the part of Mother Earth, our planet, who, in my opinion, is just screaming for help and attention, and really trying to get our attention. There is no chance that nuclear will be built anymore anywhere. I don't think Iran may. Of course, Iran's where it is. It's building some reactors, but every country in the world, and China has been on the brink of economic collapse here for about a week now. Right before the earthquake, there was a whole roll of stories that were coming in, documenting how the Chinese meltdown was imminent, that the rubber bands and the springs holding that beast together were breaking. And something else that I saw talking about China, which was amazing. This was everything that I say here, of course, was documented and posted on the World News Desk in the work that we do 7 days a week at CollapseNet, is that China now spends more money on internal security than it does on the People's Liberation Army, which also includes the People's Liberation Army Air Force and the People's Liberation Army Navy. In other words, Japan is focusing more, spending more energy worried about internal unrest And so there seems to be like maybe there's another law in politics here at the end of post-industrial civilization, that as hard as nations push outside in the global sphere, there's an equal and opposite reaction requiring them to spend as much or more on internal security. Because the real issue, and I talked about this at length yesterday at Zeitgeist, at Z-Day, because as this all comes down, we're never going to see the wonderful cities that have been thought out by Jacques Fresco and Peter Joseph and all the wonderful folks there. I didn't like the art. You know, it's a little sterile for me, but that's not the point. Is that that's not what's coming next, and there will never be, there will cannot be at this point, a voluntary shift in human consciousness with a nice orderly playing field upon which to build and make these transitions and design this new stuff. But the one thing from Zeitgeist that cannot be lost is their absolutely clear understanding of the evils of infinite growth and the infinite growth monetary paradigm, which is killing us all right now. And that wisdom needs to be preserved, and that vision and understanding, because that's what will lead us eventually, for those who make it out the other end of transition, to a resource-based economy. And the whole issue of how we liberate ourselves from the control of this monetary beast is a real tough one. That's the one that nobody has a perfect answer for. In the speech yesterday, I quoted something I wrote, which I'm going to paraphrase now, from an essay called Global Corp, one of my most famous essays from the FTW days. But what I said was, when this all comes down to the end, as the wealth disparity increases and all of the wealth in the world is aggregated in two or three hands, and the last merger and acquisition has taken place, the chief financial officer of Global Corp, as the last human being dies and as this planet goes dark, will say, "Hooray, we did it." And that's the way so that's what needs to be broken. And I'm hearing a little chatter on the web. This group Anonymous has just released a tape. We have it. We will have it up. We have it on Must See Videos. It's way down at the bottom of our homepage on CollapseNet now. I think everybody should go look at that video. Anonymous is the group that's standing up for Bradley Manning, that's standing up for WikiLeaks. Leave that aside for a second, but they've just released a new tape, and they've got something that looks like it's going to happen in the Empire State, and they've essentially declared kind of a nonviolent guerrilla war on the infinite growth monetary paradigm. And I say, well, you know what it is now? It's just self-defense. It's just self-defense. And that's where we've come to. There's a question for Steve from Long Beach, California, who believes the real danger from Japan is not the fallout, but instead the civil unrest. He wants to know your thoughts. Well, yeah, that's why we got to take one problem at a time. I'm not sure that I would call what's imminent is civil unrest. I survived a major earthquake, several actually, here in L.A. I was living 2 miles south of the epicenter of the Northridge quake in Los Angeles in 1994. And bear in mind now that the Japanese quake was roughly 100 times stronger than Northridge, and I remember Northridge. What the most immediate concerns are: starvation, dehydration, disease, and people dying from exposure. That's the first thing. I'm not even worried about civil unrest at this point. And the Japanese are, and I absolutely salute the Japanese people for their ability to function. All the stories coming out of Japan say that there's no looting, there's no civil unrest, and this is part of the Japanese culture and character, and I find it most honorable. I'm not so much worried about civil unrest, but the humanitarian catastrophe is going to be far-reaching, and these tsunamis are going to be striking out for a while with unknown effects. Food is also a big issue. We've been posting on CollapseNet stories from all over, very reputable places, the UN and major news outlets, which have said clearly that in 2011 the world must have a bumper harvest or it will face global anarchy. And the earliest estimations I have seen, or the best ones I have seen so far, say that approximately 30% of Japan's rice crop has been destroyed. So all the rubber bands which have been stretched tight are now going to be stretched tighter. It's going to be difficult to say which one's going to snap first. Okay, we've got another question here. Hi, Mike. I was wondering if you've heard about the earthquake in the central Arkansas. Oh, anyway, who? Yes, that's a whole series of stories. And, you know, with all this bad news that's been going on, thank you for bringing this up. It's good to go back and visit some new stuff. Shale gas is getting its butt kicked out there. Clearly, I mean, we've had five, six stories on the World News Desk from the region down there showing that very clear evidence that a series of mini earthquakes in Arkansas is caused by fracking. Fracking's been booted out of Philadelphia. There are illegal moves to stop fracking all over the country. And I need to hearken back to one of our recent guests on the Lifeboat Hour. Tom Lindsay from the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, who has mounted a legal strategy which to use against fracking, which takes away corporate personhood, which says that the earth has rights. It does. Which says that nothing can usurp the right to local self-governance. And he has been stopping shale gas projects, or he has been working with communities to stop. And they did it in Philly. And there's other moves around the country. So shale gas has taken some big whacks on the chin. Hoorah! So that we don't trash the place any more than we already have. And I'm kind of happy about that. We got another question. Thanks, guys. It's really nice to just know that you're out there paying attention tonight. I'm kind of tired. Mike, in 1986, they tried to suppress the reactor in Chernobyl with boron or something similar. Do you know? Yes, this is underway. Also, what are your feelings that our government will downplay the seriousness of any fallout? I don't trust anything our government tells us about anything anymore. How can we? How can we possibly? They tell us there's a recovery. Real unemployment's close to 30%. They tell us the Gulf of Mexico is safe. People are dropping dead. Kids are getting sick. Hair is falling out. Baby dolphins are being stillborn prematurely, washing up on shore in waves. The U.S. government's buying Gulf seafood to feed to the military personnel. That's just about as cynical as it gets, because if they die sooner, they won't have to pay benefits or pensions, I guess. I certainly would expect the U.S. government to minimize, because when you're in a situation like this, or you have a situation, a catastrophe of this magnitude, you have to face the fact that, and we've all been prepared for this in the U.S. In the event of a major earthquake, you got to be prepared to survive 2 to 3 to 4 days on your own. That means all your own water, food, medical, whatever you need, because it's going to take that long. And that was, you know, that's for an earthquake smaller than the one in Japan, to get help to people. So, again, we need to stay on guard for ourselves, and that's why CollapseNet is here, and that's why I jumped so quickly once I really sensed that there was a potential which still exists for a major catastrophic release, not only from one, but from two, three, or possibly more reactors. To get that information up about the trade winds and potassium iodide. There are a lot of good experts out here. Nicole Foss is one, but we're going to be bringing them to you on the World News Desk as we stay on top of this. Steve just wanted to clarify, he meant, how things would affect the West Coast, if I'd like to address that. I don't know. I mean, obviously I'm on the West Coast, and even though I'm moving out of Los Angeles, I'm still moving someplace on the West Coast. I and all of my staff and most of the CollapseNet staff in the States lives on the left coast here. We got some great people back east. I don't want to kick them out. I don't want to ignore them. But we're all scattered from L.A. All the way up to Seattle. And we're all going to be affected. And I'm just watching very closely. The only thing I'm convinced that I have to look for is any indication of a massive catastrophic release of radiation into the air. And it may have already happened. There in Japan, it's hard to get information. I don't think it has. There's enough reports saying, though, that it hasn't been a catastrophic meltdown yet. But that's the one thing that I'm looking for. Again, now there's so many things in play starting tomorrow, Monday, as the world tries to readjust itself to this, that I'm just keeping my eyes and ears open and I'm ready to move. Do whatever needs to be done as the situation indicates. Again, stay watching stay with us at CollapseNet. You know, we're really pulling it together from all over the world, and you'll find that on the World News Desk and a lot of our free stories there. Carrie from Arkansas is curious on your thoughts on earthquakes linked to injection wells. We just talked about that, but that's fine. Let's beat up on shale gas some more. I'm ready to beat up on some. Makes us feel powerful for a change. There was recently a quake in Arkansas that might be linked to the New Madrid Fault. Yes, that's been very clearly established. I want to say that again. Shale gas is so destructive. And I tip the hat to the people who made the movie Gasland. Sorry, the name escapes me at the moment. They're great soldiers out here on the field with the rest of us who are trying to restore some kind of common sense and civility and to the way we live. But speaking of shale gas and fracking, excuse me. I've been bombarded by these stories on Bakken Shale. Did you all see that? As soon as the oil price got over 100 and people were starting to freak out, all of a sudden there was this flurry of these old BS articles, these stories that have been around circulating for 5, 6, 7 years, that there were billions and billions of barrels of shale oil out on the Colorado Plateau in the western states. And it would solve all our energy problems. Well, I wrote about that in Confronting Collapse, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it takes something like 1.5 tons of shale rock to provide enough kerogen. It's not oil in Bakken Shale. It's kerogen, which is a completely different substance. And the way you get the kerogen, I love this, you drill down thousands of feet in rock, and then you inject the same or similar toxic water, fresh water, laden with chemicals, and you have to heat the rock to 4,500 degrees centigrade to make the rock literally explode like popcorn to release the kerogen. And it takes like a ton and a half of rocks to provide enough kerogen to power one car, for like 2 weeks. And you would need all the fresh water in the Colorado River. But it's amazing that the old paradigm continues to throw these absolute nonsensical, dishonest, deceitful. And, boy, if there is any justice in the world, sooner or later, somebody's got to take the task. These advertisers, and I would particularly like to talk to the American Petroleum Institute and Lauren Hutton for the crap they put out. So there's a rush of people talking about all that stuff, and of course it's not going to make any difference. I hope in Arkansas that you get, and from what I understand, that there's been some good progress down there in the courts stopping fracking in Arkansas. But yeah, no, there's very strong evidence that that your flurry of quakes down there are linked to New Madrid. Okay, we got about 10 minutes left. What's going on with me and us at CollapseNet? We found a great place up near Sebastopol, California, on 2 acres with a well, great little house. We're going to start permaculture. We're going to hopefully get ourselves together and be up there and by April 1 with all of our great friends up in Sonoma County. I'm really looking forward to the move. We're doing that also so that in the event that something does happen catastrophically on the West Coast, that I can have a few extra places to sleep, our staff and their family, if we need to give them a place to go. And again, that's where everybody should be thinking right now. That's the way we should all be thinking right now. Everybody's going to watch to see the effects starting next week of the Japanese earthquake. And where we were before is exactly where we are now, only in spades. 3 months worth of food. Take it from tracker Tom Brown's teachings. The hierarchy of needs, according to Tom Brown, the first thing is shelter. More people die of exposure than if they're out in the woods or lost, than die from dehydration. You need shelter. You need fresh, clean water. You need food. And then you build up from that clothing, medical supplies. Look to all of that now. Again, I cannot repeat it enough, and I'm so glad that we've been recommending people get potassium iodide for quite a while. We used to do that at FTW, as a matter of fact. It's a very inexpensive investment, does not require a prescription, and in the event that there is a panic, having some potassium iodide would be a great barter item. You know, if there is a widespread fallout and people don't have it and they want to get it, so tighten your act up. Everybody needs to do that. I have to confess tonight it's 6:52 and I'm just kind of tired beyond belief. We've been pushing it for a long time here, but every time that I start to feel tired or overwhelmed, I think about the people in Japan. And I think that I have nothing to complain about. I think that none of us do. It's very difficult to watch, but we have to keep our eyes on it. And most importantly, we have to prepare for whatever may come our way as a result. You know, I'm kind of rambling right now, so I don't know what to do. We might play another song here, because I'm not one to sit here and talk when I think I've said about everything I have to say. It's been real busy. It's going to be real busy next week. Maybe if we can just cue up a song, and maybe we'll just take out the show with that, because I'm going to take off a little bit early tonight. We're going to have some guests again soon, and I look forward to being back with you next week a little more refreshed and more prepared. But you know that I and everybody at CollapseNet will be on this around the clock to bring you the best information that we possibly can. I was just thinking that I would like to hear the song "You Lose," and my board operator said New York just said, "I have You Lose ready." Okay, man, cue it up. Hey, I love you guys. I'll be back next week on the Lifeboat Hour. We'll talk to you then. Good night.